Welcome to the Ethics Experts, where we're elevating ethics and compliance and HR to the strategic level it's supposed to be.
This is the Ethics Experts. If it's your first time joining us, welcome. And if you are a returning subscriber, hello, bestie. Hope you're having an amazing day. You look amazing. This day is just going to keep getting better for you. See what happens when you subscribe to the Ethics Experts. You get that bonus greeting on every single episode. So hit the subscribe button. I am here with the one, the only, Courtney Welton. Hey, Courtney.
Hey, Nick. Good to see you.
So if anybody has been living under a rock, Courtney is the senior VP at Allstate Insurance Company. You wear a bunch of hats. You are the Chief Privacy, Compliance, and Ethics Officer, and you're also the founder of the Innovation Law thing there. What is Innovation Law? Let's just dive right in.
All right. Well, it's I would say at a high level, I have two hats at Allstate, right? One, like you mentioned, is maybe a little bit more traditional and what people would know and have heard before, which is that Chief Ethics, Compliance, and Ethics Officer role, where I do run all of those control programs for all of Allstate, all the enterprise, all the subsidiaries, and I report to the board of directors and really to the employees and to our customers to make sure that all of what's important to us reputationally happens from a compliance, legal, and ethics perspective. And then when I came to the company about 3.5 years ago, I founded Innovation Law, which, to your point, some people say, what does that mean? It's a fair question. And the reason we named it that is it really is about innovating the legal space. And in Allstate's case, it was about becoming a more digital company and beginning to protect our customers with things beyond insurance. And to do that, you needed lawyers with some different skills. So things like privacy, cybersecurity, intellectual property. And even when they looked at more traditional things like regulatory compliance, like privacy, they needed to look at them in a little bit different way and be a little more agile in the approach that they have and really think about customers first. So that's probably a good description, but
yeah, but there's some interesting words that you used in there. You talked about agile and customer first, and that in and of itself feels like a bit of an innovation in terms of how law and these functions have sort of functioned, at least over the last 10 years, let's say, to not be too heavy-handed with it. What do you think it was about you as a person or your background that made you kind of particularly adept at this kind of thing or particularly suited for this innovation and this intersection of all these kind of complex things?
I think that I've always loved change management and leadership and unlocking people and their best skills to add value. I started out in business. I ran a nursing home after college, and I really loved that work and loved making sure that the patients were cared for, that the employees felt valued, that families felt like their needs were being met there. And it led me to go to law school. And I've always thought of law and compliance as a helping profession. I know everybody doesn't think about it that way, but I do. I come from a family of helpers. And so when I think about the change management side, though, it part of my work at Motorola, Google, and Lenovo, which was an evolution of starting with Motorola when it was split into two publicly traded companies. I was with the mobile side, cell phone side, that was sold to Google. Much later, it was also sold to Lenovo. And so I really spent the bulk of my 10 years in technology in that change space. And every time we had, you know, a new product or service, every time we had a new leadership team, every time we had a new culture to bring together employees, every time we had different customers we were serving, depending on where it was in the world, we had to think about doing the right thing, setting up a new way of innovating to make it make sense for the employees and customers. So it really fit with my background to bring those skills to Allstate when it was going through its transformation.
So I want to back up a little bit. You say that you came from a family of helpers. Tell me some more about that.
My dad was a psychologist. My mom was a teacher. I have a sister who ran daycares forever, another sister who is an executive director of a nonprofit for physical and sexual abuse of children. And we love to advocate. We love to give people a voice. We all love the study of people. So I believe that's what law and compliance is about, is, you know, in the end, we're trying to drive those laws and compliances. In the case of corporate America, they really, all of those things matter for the customer. Hopefully every law or regulation out there is either for a customer or for your employees, or to make sure products are safe, you name it, you could tie it back to trying to do the right thing. So that's how I think of my role.
That's so interesting because, you're kind of this unique flavor of somebody who's in this role. Some people are very sort of ones and zeros or letter of the law types. And from the moment I met you, you just seemed like this, I don't know, sort of this brighter energy and this sort of this people first, you know, thing. You know, you kind of exude that. And I think it's kind of interesting that, you know, you kind of tie this back to this love of studying people and, you know, this foundation of being helpers. I'm kind of in your camp. I think that's what this game is really all about, especially in this next sort of 10 years, as this function can really sort of elevate and really become a strategic lever for us. When did you first kind of recognize that difference between you and perhaps your classmates in law school or other folks in this profession as a sort of unique angle? And how have you kind of gotten the courage to like lean into that when other people might be kind of taking a different tack?
I think that I was trained differently in that I was a business person first. This was the nursing home I ran at 24 years old. It was my first big city that I lived in from a very small town. I had 190 beds.
Wow.
I had 160 staff. I had 20, and you know, that's 190 people just in patients that I had to concern myself with. I thought all 160 of those employees I cared about, I was worried about them. And then you add in all the families that were, you know, important to me. It really trained me differently. I went from, I had always had part-time jobs. I ran teams. I was a youth sports leader in my town. And so I had jobs, but there's nothing like being responsible for other people's livelihoods and for their ones. So I learned a lot. And when I went back to law school, I felt like I came in with something, not everybody, some people did come in with backgrounds, absolutely, in business and other jobs. But it certainly differentiated how I looked at it, because I knew that ultimately I wanted to use my law degree to, you know, do something that involved leading people and making a difference in people's lives. It might seem different to some people that was in, you know, a Fortune 70 company, but as opposed to doing just pro bono work, although I have done a lot of pro bono work. But I feel like there's good work that all of us can do in whatever place we decide to put our passions towards. I think I always came at it from a little bit different angle, Nick, but I will tell you, being trained the way I was trained at the time period of Motorola to Google to Lenovo, I had incredible peers. I had incredible bosses. I worked with some of the best business people I know. And I worked with every single culture I could imagine at the time that I couldn't have even imagined when I was young that I would get to work with. And everybody gave me different perspective and made me think about how we do our work and how we serve our customers. And I learned from every single one of those. So that time period of working for that company through all of its evolution and the people that I had the pleasure of working with taught me to think differently, because you have to innovate yourself. You just have to.
Well, I think, you know, if I can jump back quickly to running that nursing home, you had to do a lot of innovation at that age. I mean, the average patient obviously is very like maybe multiples of your age. You're 24 years old. You have 160 something people that have to report to you. How did you get that position, first of all? And second of all, like, what were the tactics that you quickly had to learn to be successful in that role that you probably carry with you today?
Yeah, well, I started out right out of college doing just honestly being a activity director, which is sort of funny. I think I mentioned to you that I'm tone deaf and really can't sing or anything, but because I would smile and be happy, it worked out well for me. And so I found a love for elderly people and ended up applying for a opening here in Chicago to be able to move to Chicago where I wanted to begin my life and my adult life. And I was actually working for somebody, which I don't think I told you this when we chatted before a little bit, but he is a famous, became a famous rock star. His name is David Draiman of Disturbed.
Oh, cool.
They've been on a hiatus for a while, but he's brilliant as well. And I ended up being his assistant, it's called assistant administrator, which is a professional role. And he ended up going on to his career as a rock star, and I got to run the business. And so
how crazy.
It was a little bit of being in the right place at the right time. He was really interesting. And the company that ran the nursing home, they were willing to take a I guess take a flyer on a 24-year-old who really loved what she did, and I'd been trained well. And so they promoted me to full administrator when he moved on to grow his rock star career. So
crazy. What a crazy story. I mean, look, you're a happy person. You know, you're a low ego person. Clearly you're kind of attributing this to being right place at the right time, but those people were running a business and very quickly they saw the agency that you exhibit. Like, where does that agency come from? You come from this family of helpers, but you also, I'm trying to get at, like, I'm previewing a little bit of, like, a lot of the innovations you're running are due to the agency you have and you kind of solving for outcome and not letting these impediments stop you, which I think was probably a big role or was like a big factor in your success at this nursing home at such a unbelievably young age, you know?
I think the thing is that it's not, experience is important. Having the intelligence and wisdom to know that other people know things you didn't, you should definitely take that into consideration in your career and learn from people. But everybody has something to add, whether or not they're 24 or 44, whether or not they're 1 year in their career or 10 years. And the guiding principles of solving problems, thinking about different ways to solve problems, getting a bunch of people in a room who have a diverse perspective and figuring out if you can move the needle and make a difference, that concept is something you can put into play anywhere you are. And at the nursing home, I just immediately realized that if things were going to get better in that nursing home for the employees, for the families, for the patients, then you've got to do stuff that's different. My favorite, probably one of my favorite stories, although, wow, it was a wild number of years there, so I have a ton of fun stories. But one was I was doing rounds, and I traditionally did rounds at least twice a day. And that was really just checking patients, you know, doing something somebody wouldn't expect, walking in, just really, you know, really looking carefully and seeing were people being taken care of? Were things being... What was, you know, just using your regular intuition, but not staying in your office. And that was something they hadn't been used to in our nursing home. And so I started doing that regularly and I walked into a room, and that room had four wonderful people lived in there. And I could barely move in the room without choking because it smelled so bad. It was, it was awful. And I immediately felt like if this had been my loved one, how would I feel? That's not fair. They have to live like that. And I don't blame anybody because I get it. You know, as you well know, healthcare is tough. People are short-staffed. People are trying to do the right thing. But at the end of the day, somehow, somewhere, those of us who were working in that nursing home were desensitized to what that particular, those residents were feeling about their home. And so I had a couple managers watch each floor, and it was a three level nursing home, as well as a basement where all of our kitchen was. I had somebody go to each floor. And then I called every single, at the time, I think we had 65 employees in all into that room. And I shut the door and I didn't say anything for about 60 seconds. And I let everybody start to cough a little, choke a little. I guess now with COVID, it'd be a really bad idea. So don't hold that against me. It was a long, long time ago. But at the end of the day, I then eventually opened the door and I just looked at everybody and just said, we can do better. This is somebody's home. How it feels in here for us is probably exponential for them, given what they have in terms of physical conditions that they have to deal with. And we should never walk by this, no matter what it is. And then I spent 8 hours cleaning that room and explaining that every single one of us can roll up our sleeves and make a difference, because in that day, we made a difference for them, right? So I've always felt like we got to do those things. And that's not something you have to go to get a law degree for. You don't have to, it's just doing the right thing and thinking about setting examples and thinking about trying to solve problems, which is what we all are born with, that capability.
Love that story. I got chills when you were telling me that. That's such a beautiful picture and such a beautiful like manifestation of the heart that I think you kind of bring to these different, that's just who you are, you know? When did you know, hey, okay, I'm going to leap into law?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have to say, I always wanted to be a lawyer, and I guess my family would say because I was bossy, I was meant to. But I did love the idea of working and really feeling what it was like to have not just these part-time jobs, but figure out what it was like to work with real professionals out there who were doing something full-time. And I did fall in love during a internship with old people. And I really was like, I want to work with elderly people for a while and figure this out. But probably within about 7 months of having accountability for the nursing home, it was so clear that, first of all, I realized I really love the business side of it. As much as I also love the people, I did find it interesting to try to run a business and make sure I could both take care of people and have a way to, you know, have a going business where people could mm-hmm. be paid and make a living out of it and make sure I had enough profit to pay the company that was owning it so they could buy more of them and take care of more people. So I did love that part of it. But I realized because of the regulations, because of the unions for employees, because of what, you know, we've dealt with in litigation and otherwise, you constantly realize that law, business, people, it's all connected.
Yeah.
And, you know, you should do the right thing no matter what, but often laws and regulations try to reinforce what you should be doing. And so understanding how to interpret them, understanding how to analyze them, understanding how to problem solve well are all things that lawyers get trained to do. And that really sparked me knowing that that was going to be where my graduate school would probably go.
It's kind of interesting. You know, I get this sort of holistic interconnectedness mentality that you have. And even as you described this decision to go into law, it wasn't an end unto itself. It was a means to another end of being able to be more effective and being able to navigate these things from a business side and from, you know, meeting the needs of the people side. I find that kind of interesting. And I think there are echoes of that kind of throughout your experience, which, you know, I think is interesting, inspiring. And also, you know, part of the reason I was so excited to get you on here is because you kind of exhibit this sort of multifaceted, this multidimensional, you know, entity in this game that I think a lot of us should aspire to be, because our impact is not one dimensional. It's not just meeting a regulation. It's not just putting some policy in place and rolling that out. It's about the people, and it's about being able to, you know, weigh the business side of it, you know, again, in pursuit of some organizational mission that's probably and should be at least, you know, beyond the dollars and cents on the bottom line. As you moved from law school into your first role and on into Motorola, which I'm sure was a very exciting and interesting path through, how did you start to ascend up into the organization that put yourself into the position to now be sort of running ethics, compliance, privacy for such a massive organization now? What were those initial experiences like?
Yeah, well, I would say I picked, to your point, I do think a little bit strategically about where I want to be. And I do think we have very little time in life to pick the people we want to be around, the organizations we want to be associated with, where we want to spend our time, right? And I picked Skadden Arps. It's a great law firm. I picked it because I believed that they truly were one of the best firms in the world. And I knew that they could hone my legal skills, because law school, it's getting a little better around clinics and different things, but it's still more professorial than it is really learning how to practice. I knew that the practice of law, you got to be around other, you know, very smart people who have done more than you and really trained you. So Skadden was, I picked it partly that, partly also they had a huge commitment to pro bono, and I was able to do a lot of very interesting pro bono work with them. And I really appreciated the opportunity to do that and be able to give back. But at the end of the day, every time I really found joy at Skadden, beyond the fact that I loved working with my clients directly and my colleagues, it was usually when I was truly more engaged on site with a client versus, say, writing a brief or writing something for the Sixth Circuit. Like, it didn't give me that same excitement of working with people. And having had that in the nursing home and leading people, I knew, wow, there's something there. And so I started to, I did go clerk for a little bit, for a year on the Sixth Circuit. I did want to understand how justice worked from the judge's side. So I did enjoy that. But when I came back to Skadden, I knew that ultimately I'd want to be in-house and get that kind of true on the first line, working with the business people about how to shape their business and be compliant, but also be creative. So when I really looked at Motorola because of its iconic brand, I loved that it was a Midwest company. I loved that it was in tech. I actually found it not from a bunch of listings. I went on the Crain's top 100 company list and found something, had about 10 that I was like, these things would make me excited to wake up every morning. Motorola was one of them. And it did. Every day that I worked there, I loved it. And in that capacity for Motorola, because there was so much change, and I tell all my people this right now, because Allstate's going through a lot of change. Change provides opportunity, particularly early in your career. I don't think I would be anywhere I am today in terms of what knowledge I have, what experiences I had, if Motorola had been a company that wasn't bought and sold, that didn't operate in 160 countries, that didn't have the different challenges it went through, and how many transformations, I wouldn't have had the experience I had, because you just couldn't have sat in what in a company where nothing changed for 9 years and get that experience. So, I worked hard, of course. I tried to work innovatively and smart. I delivered value that was outside what I would say your traditional table stakes being a good lawyer. So I put myself in the right position as well, as a high performer, but I was also fortunate that the company went through transformation. So I could put myself out there, and there were opportunities and I jumped at them.
Yeah. It sounds like you kind of set your own plate in the sense that you went to an organization that was going to at least put a bunch of pitches across the plate for you to put a bat on. You know what I'm saying? Like you had a bunch of pitches to swing at. How long did it take you once you got into Motorola to start like really unleashing and being, the full Courtney? I mean, I'll say that when I've gotten into new positions, it always takes me a while to like be myself. Yeah. How quickly were you able to sort of blossom, and what was that feedback loop that really helped to build your confidence that you carried forward to now Allstate and so forth?
Well, I don't know you long enough to say this, Nick, but I don't buy it that it takes you a while to be yourself, because you're pretty authentic, and I think I got a little sense for you fairly quickly. We'll see. I'll have to ask.
You'll have to see. Yeah.
I'll have to see, but I'm guessing not that long. I don't know if I buy it. I would say pretty quickly, and I guess that goes back to what you asked me earlier. I guess most people are not. I always say, you're supposed to be self-aware, and I am, and I certainly work at being more self-aware, because you can never ever not think about how people are perceiving you so that you can do better for them. Not because you have to worry about whether or not someone judges you, but if you're a leader, you should care about how you're perceived.
Yeah.
That said, you have to stay authentic. And you do have to be who you are. And some people aren't gonna love that style. They're not. I tend to be, pretty direct, pretty loud, pretty intense. I'm an athlete. Like I like to do things, hard. And that's, I've never made excuses for it. It is who I am. That said, I always do work on the fact that to some people that can rub you the wrong way. And I do care about people. So on the margins, I'm always going to try to be the best leader I can be and the best team member. But I'm pretty authentic, pretty fast. So I think in every role I've had, whether or not it's individual contributor or leadership roles, I tend to let people know who I am. I believe that everybody should bring their whole self to work. I'll give you an example. At Allstate, which I've now been there a little over 3.5 years, almost immediately upon getting there, a colleague of mine and my direct team, so a small team up here, he was the executive sponsor for Pride, which is our employment resource group for LGBT+. And he knew that I was bisexual, and said, would you be interested in being executive sponsor? I know you just started. I know some people aren't comfortable with it. I'm the only out officer. We have 200 officers. What do you think? Would you be interested? And I said, absolutely. Like, no problem. And I did we call them Leaders for Teachers. They're kind of cool. They really take the leaders, go on Allstate TV, and they do open up about their personal lives, about that, how it's connected to bringing your whole life self to work. And so I was fortunate for them to ask me to do one of those. And I, came out to the company on my story, because I was married to a man for 17 plus years, 2 beautiful children. And later in life, I have determined that I'm bisexual, and I'm engaged to a woman. And that's my truth. So I speak it. One example of many, but I think that you can only add your value and be who you are, bring that purpose to work that really changes who you are, and bring that diverse opinion and perspective if you're willing to put yourself out there too. And I've been fortunate. I've worked in companies where I can do that safely. I wish that for everyone.
Yeah,
that's what I would love. I think probably pretty quickly, people knew who they were dealing with in almost every role I have.
And how did bringing this sort of different dimension of your life and who you are to the forefront kind of did you see that empower any other folks on your team, or did you see there was like new connections being made from the people that, you know, were entrusted to you or anything like that, that helped kind of, you know, increase the thread count of the tapestry of the culture that you're building?
Yeah, I think that anytime that I've been authentic about whatever it is, I also went through divorce and it was really tough.
Yeah.
And I shared what that was like and how hard that is for your family. And, you know, I'm actually today best friends with my ex-husband and we get along very well. But I do think that when you show vulnerabilities, and some of them can be personal, some of them can be professional. It can be, I've had times where I've hired people that haven't worked out and I've tried to explain why that particular choice I made probably wasn't great for them or the company or me. Here's what I would do differently. I think whenever we can share vulnerabilities that people are comfortable with, and you have to be comfortable with it. I think that we are humans and we're not robots, and we are valuable to a company for so many experiences that we bring to the table, and the resiliency with which we show in our private lives and our professional lives certainly makes for what you can transfer to whatever comes next. And as I'm growing into adulting, it does seem like there's a lot of tough stuff. Ethics compliance is a good example. You know, you got to do the right thing, whether or not you want to do the right thing. Sometimes you got to set up your really important systems so that even when someone you think will always do the right thing, if they're not sitting in that chair, everybody will do the right thing. Right. And we have to plan for that. And I think being honest that humans fall short, being honest that we don't make perfect decisions, being honest that we need to improve things and fail safes and flags and ways to make sure we keep each other accountable, but at the end we are resilient and we do find paths to improve things both personally and professionally, that to me is important. And it's important as leaders, it's important as compliance professionals and ethics leaders. I think it helps, but I'd have to ask my team if they'd say that. I think so.
Yeah. And not to put you on the spot, but I get the sense from your team that they would, this is just my guess, just from meeting you, that you probably have a team of people that would walk through walls for you. And I would guess that it's probably because you treat them like a human being. You don't treat them like, you know, people to carry your palanquin, you know what I'm saying? Like a queen up the mountain, like you're kind of in it with them. And just the way that we've talked, like you don't seem, maybe there's a wrong word, but like you don't seem threatened by your team. And I've talked to other folks who are in positions like yours that are these high level positions where they don't want to shine the light on anybody else. And you kind of seem to be the antithesis of that. Where does that come from? And like, where did you get the confidence to do that? And also, how can we get more people to feel that?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we need to change corporate America, right? We need to change corporate America. Having more diverse folks in the ranks of leadership, I think, will make a difference.
Yeah.
Because many of those who have come from minority groups or have a diverse perspective understand how to bring up others and think collaboratively and in teamwork. So the makeup of corporate America is shifting, right? And so I think systemically that is important. And I always think about how I can improve that. What I will tell you is for me, my own family life, my parents always felt there was enough love to go around. There was enough money, and we weren't rich, but there was enough to give away to someone else. There was certainly enough care and ability to help someone else's life. So scarcity, I always think about it like this. Most people who are insecure and don't want to help other people push their development forward, there's some kind of concept of scarcity there.
Right.
I didn't have that. The opposite. If we weren't helping somebody else or figuring out a way to do something else, then that was where we would be in trouble. And I probably would have gotten in trouble with my parents or lectured for my dad, who's like a psychologist, which was always a very long lecture.
Yeah, right.
You know, you had to do the right thing. You had to figure it out. Doesn't mean we always did, but we'd get in trouble for it if we didn't. So I think that for me, we should always hire people who are better than us. And they should always be hired in places that you wish you were better at. And that can be everything. That can be from a skill set to a particular personal characteristic. We should build our families like that. We should build our friends like that. just by the nature of who we are as humans, we're better together with this puzzle piece about other people fit us and help us grow. And I think corporate America is always better served with a high performing team that is not competing, but is pushing each other to both be the best that you can be for each other and for the company and whatever purpose you're trying to drive, mission you're trying to get at, hopefully to take better care of your customers and your employees. So that I've always tried to do. I have very high performing teams. I always hire people that someday I said, hey, someday you're going to be my boss. That's fine. That's great. Remember to hire me. I love that. And I love seeing people grow. It's by far my favorite part is seeing where, you know, great people go and the influence they have in corporate America. Cause I do think we have work to do to make corporate America more humanistic and focused on employees feeling valued. And I know that we've got a little bit of a shift in being able to do that a little better to some extent recently, but I think there's so much more work to be done.
So not to get too Piaget on you, but you know how some people think that your personality is sort of locked by the time you're like 7 or 8? Mm-hmm. Do you think that this sort of scarcity versus like abundance mentality is a similar thing? Like it's locked in people, or that, you know, you perhaps may have been grown, a person may have sort of grown up with this sort of scarcity thing, both from a dollars and cents perspective or like a recognition perspective, but they can have some sort of awakening where it's like, oh man, there's a ton of fish in the sea and I don't have to get nervous that the person sitting in the boat next to me might catch my fish.
I think there are real times systemically where someone grows up in scarcity and it is going to affect them. And it should. I mean, that's, and it could be trauma. But separate from that, from the psychological part, I think a lot of the scarcity that you see in corporate America is created.
I agree with you.
It's created by people, you know, and I think those are two very different things. And what I'm talking more is that created, right? It's that idea that, you know, oh my gosh, right now there's one officer position open and it has to be me. Whereas if you think, wow, this incredible person got that job. And by getting that job, more people incredible like that person
correct.
Will get the job or more, right. more opportunities will come up. Right. And so it just to me, it's corporate America thinking differently about it. And those of us who are in leadership roles in corporate America thinking different about it. And I think having diverse people, and I think we're doing a much better job of that, but there's always more we can do. They are going to lead the way in making sure that others are given the opportunity to be in the room and move things forward for more people.
Yeah. And the change is not going to come like in a linear fashion. It's going to come in sort of a parabolic or like logarithmic fashion, because they're just dominoes that are going to start knocking down. I think you're right. I think that sort of corporate structure reinforces a lot of that scarcity. And I think it can be shattered once people see that, okay, there's a lot of upside and there's more upside for all of us, not just this limited, amount. So let's change gears a little bit. I want to talk about that navigation with Motorola through these other massive companies and as there's, you know, just like in mixed families, there's like this blending of cultures and so forth that's like exponentially bigger on a company perspective. What was that like as you left, you know, sort of the home base and you went to the first planet and then you went to the next planet? And what did you learn on those journeys through these different cultures as, you know, as being acquired and so forth?
Number one thing I learned was just empathy. Empathy, again, you say, I don't know what it is. You learned everything you need to know in kindergarten. I don't know what the book is, but I mean, it's empathy because you have to put yourself in other people's shoes. You have to see the world through other people's eyes. You cannot come into new situations and immediately see it through your own eyes. And I will tell you, you know, when you're a strong personality, which I am, and you like to think you have a lot to draw on and a lot to give, you know, and you like to get things done yesterday, which I do, your instinct is to like go right to the solution, right? Doesn't matter what it is. Like, you know, this is how the organization should be set up. This is how we should solve this. You don't do it because you're trying to be arrogant or mean. You're doing it because you want to deliver something that you think will give benefit to everybody engaged, right? But the problem is if you don't step back and use empathy and really listen and learn and hear what your colleagues have to say, what if you're trying to solve a business problem in a new business unit, is in a different country, you cannot assume that just because it has the same label it might have in the US, that the way it is viewed there or the way that you should think about it in that different country is the same. And you have to listen, and you have to listen to those that know better than you. And you still can add value and say, well, hey, here's an analogy. Here's how I would think about this, what I would bring to the table. But you can't do it with a way of it, making it seem like that's the only way.
Right.
And it I feel like those years really honed that for me to try to figure out that right balance.
So you use this empathy. Talk about how you've sort of made the jump to Allstate, how you saw the opportunity there, and how your impact has sort of grown. Because, you know, maybe you can start by like, how has your title changed? Because mm-hmm. I think you have a very interesting title on either one of those hats that you're wearing.
Mm-hmm. So when I came to Allstate, the chief legal officer at the time knew that we needed to look at the law department and think about, as the company was going to be transforming, both our employees, our products and services, the customers and how we were going to serve them, the markets we were going to go through, which is very true. We are definitely in the journey of doing all that. She knew that there were areas of opportunity and risk that we hadn't necessarily formed skill sets around, worked a lot with. We certainly had lawyers who knew these things, but that wasn't necessarily something they'd woken up every day and worked on, right? So things like intellectual property, privacy, cybersecurity, data in general, a lot of commercial business-to-business work, things like that, and technology in general and digital. And that was my bread and butter for nearly a decade. And so I was asked to come in and just take a look. And I was thankful because her and Tom Olson, our CEO, and Don Sipkin, our now vice chair, they, when we were going through the interview process, they were so generous to say, like, we want your perspective. Like, we could tell you it's going to be this and you're being hired for this position and this. No, like, come in and help us figure out the best way to do this. And they had a lot of great things already in the law department that they had already started, other areas of the company too, but I was talking about the law department. And so I dug in, I did a listening tour. I spent a lot of time talking to key stakeholders, some that were already in the law department, some that had left the law department, business colleagues, spent time figuring out where was the company going? What was the strategy? What were the things that people wished the law department did more of? What did they wish the law department did less of and why? You know, it doesn't mean that they get everything they want, but like, what was the reason behind it? And then I fairly quickly, within probably 6 months, maybe 3 months, 3 to 6 months, I realized that creating innovation law was probably the right way to create a department that focused on those specialty areas and begin to kind of really bring up the whole organization around those areas in law department. So even though some of the work would be contained there, the goal was also just to get everybody's education up about it, issue spotting, making sure people felt like they had people to go to who knew those areas, had expertise in it, hire people there, develop people with that, unlock talent. So we built that. And it's evolved over time. You know, we've taken on more work than I always try to remember. Was this work really being done before we were a new department? And the answer is to some degree, but not at the scale, right? Because when you focus on it, you dig deeper out and you unearth things. It's kind of like when you first do ethics training at a company and you really do, or diversity and inclusion training, you start educating everybody about it and you make them really think about it. And if they've got that mindset, all of a sudden you get more cases. Somebody calls the hotline more often, right?
Right.
You've gotten them to think about it. And it doesn't mean those things didn't exist before, but for whatever reason, everybody wasn't focused on attending to it.
Right.
So for innovation law, the actual practice areas have grown, the amount of work has grown, but we've also just become more of a digital company. We're serving our customers differently. We do things, we support all of the businesses that are non-insurance. So, you know, we have a warranty business, we have an electronic warranty business. We have a telematics business. We have an identity protection business because we think we need to protect people where they're very nervous, which is in their digital footprint. And it all made sense that this group would try to really make sure we have the skill sets to do that well, to, you know, preserve our customers as well as our employees in that transition. So that was, I would say, 3 to 6 months. We set that up and then built it out.
Cool.
And then in about a year, the enterprise business conduct group, which is that group that leads those ethics, compliance, and privacy and investigations for Allstate, including all the subsidiaries. That leader was a peer of mine and a 40-year veteran human resource executive. He was retiring and going on to his next chapter. And I threw my hat in the ring, and I just mentioned to Susie Lees, our chief legal officer, that I would love to have a chance at running it, to kind of innovate it too, but also to build on its strength. Allstate had a great core of really good ethics, compliance, and privacy programs. But I also wanted to make sure that was mixed with innovation law and that we were innovating. And it was nice to ensure, if you think about it, these part of the innovation team was getting in with these other businesses that were newer businesses that were non-insurance. Well, in order to do that well and get through all these different subsidiaries, I felt like that would be a great way to make sure that all those great things in our ethics and compliance and privacy programs would really infuse through all the subsidiaries as well. Because I didn't want those only to stay with the core of Allstate in terms of insurance. I wanted it to be in our DNA forever in every part of our business for our customers. So it was a nice fit. And they've it's been fun to see compliance professionals think about things differently, and then innovation professionals hearing from compliance professionals why things maybe can adjust but should stay, because you start to learn the reason or the public policy for why something was put in place. So it's been a nice marriage.
Yeah, and it's built some, I imagine it's built some nice like agility to the broader function that's meant to sort of be the circulatory system to the company as Allstate extends from its sort of core business, which it was maybe 30, 50 years ago or whatever, to what you have referred to as a protection brand. So talk to me about how that innovation has kind of been a tailwind to clear the way on the ethics side or the privacy side as the business has sort of fractalized into some of these related, but maybe non, maybe at the first glance, core components of that base business.
Yeah, maybe the analogy I'll give you, actually go back to the Google Motorola days a second, and then I'll bring it back. Because this is sort of why this came to me to even ask to do this other role and combine them. So when Motorola was purchased by Google, I was with a group, I think there's probably 5 or 10 of us Motorolans who were asked by Google to work with them on some of their hardware projects. Things like Google Glass, Chromecast, a low-cost Chromebook. And I was the lawyer, but there were others. There was engineers, there were manufacturing folks, you name it. And we had a lot of fun in part because, and I really enjoyed seeing the engineers and some of the business professionals think through things, because it was always the case. I always called it pixie dust. The DNA of Google was very much software and advertising, which in software and advertising, if you want to think about it, you can analogize to what happens when you can do an over-the-air correction, right? You can change software, not everything that's overly, you know, but let's say at the highest level, you can change stuff that happens in software. Hardware, where Motorola was, the people who are really good at making actual phones, right? Some of those engineers spent 30 years doing that, maybe 40. It's very hard. 16 weeks out, you can't change the display that you've got to go purchase, right? You can't, okay, now I want it to be this many inches to this many inches. You can't do that. You can't change your battery. You can't change how much memory you need. It's not that you can't, but you certainly need a ton of lead time, right? So the mentality in Motorola was, you know, the leaders of Six Sigma, things are done very well and very process-driven because they have to be in hardware. Google can be a little bit irreverent and can be a little bit like, wow, but why are we doing this way? Let's go, you know, build a rocket ship. And it was fun to see intellectually and in operational work, those two things come together, because it felt like pixie dust. When people would try to problem solve, they came from it from different views. So it was good not to repeat the past. If you knew something that wouldn't work in manufacturing or hardware, certainly don't go and just shove your, you know, try to go right against a wall that's already there. So, you know, that was good that there were people telling us that. On the other hand, I loved when the Googlers would be like, but why do we do it that way? What if we like went around the wall? Or what if that's not a wall at all? Like, what if you think it's a wall and it's not? Yeah. And it just made for this pixie dust of, and both groups were excellent. at what they did, right? This wasn't about, you know, one being better than the other. It was about the real special thing that happens when there is diversity of thought and experience, and you're trying to get to an end goal or a purpose together. So when I think about, you know, where we're going at Allstate and the different things that we're doing, you know, we're going to, the people who are learning, who come from tech, for example, and join the company, we're providing something to the company that others might not have had. On the other hand, every day when I work with people who have been in the insurance industry or financial services through incredible transformation, I learned so much. Right. And if I didn't learn that, I probably couldn't think of how to innovate or come up with a solution. So I think it's that marriage that makes it really interesting. And I always try to figure out, where are the ways to do that? Where are you pairing people and teams and projects where you get a bunch of smart people who have diverse perspectives, who have a goal or a problem they want to solve that matters? And then that's where I think usually magic happens, particularly in corporate America.
You have this sort of tendency to like de-siloize things, I think. You knock silo walls down sort of naturally. And what you're talking about is sort of evoking this pixie dust in, you know, your current environment and so forth. And your title in and of itself kind of speaks to that. Let's talk a little bit about some of these frameworks out there where people think, well, you can't mix that soup and the nuts. You can't mix the privacy and the ethics and the compliance and the legal and all of that stuff. To me, it makes a lot of sense because we're kind of talking about one thing. We're talking about people. We're talking about human behavior. We're talking about translating the right thing into sort of actionable steps for folks, irrespective of the business or the foxhole they're fighting in. Talk to me about some of the resistance you may have felt or seen in the marketplace, and how can we speak some actual truth to shatter that misconception?
Yeah. I mean, I think, look, like when you think about when you're in charge of making sure that you have a compliance program, a privacy program, and an ethics program, for example, those are real programs. And there are real regulations out there. And the Department of Justice cares about these things. And the SEC cares about these things. And you have to do them right. And they have components that are well understood and make sense, right? But that said, nowhere in any of those laws does it say you must have a privacy team, a ethics team, and then a, you know, this other piece over here. And then, oh, I'm sorry, you have to have another team that gives legal advice that walks over here. Nowhere does it say it has to be set up that way. And when you look at it and you start to break it down to what it is you're actually trying to do as an internal provider in these places, at least what I have found helpful is to start to break that up, because number one, the cross-training of individuals to do those things, they often have a similar skill set, and then they can grow throughout different parts of the company and arguably have the skill sets that are often some of the highest risks in companies. So I want to set them up for success and add value to the company. The second is, like, we'll give you an example. We looked at our assessment process. And we would literally go to these different subsidiaries, and the ethics group, this is before we reorganized, the ethics group would assess them, then the regulatory compliance group would assess them, and then our privacy team would assess them. And let's just say that you are the CEO of our car sharing business, right? Relatively small business. That's a little intense. Like, you know, you're building a business, right? You're trying to serve customers, and you've got three different groups within one compliance team coming to you to ask questions that, sure, they're not all exactly the same, but they're related and probably totally could do a better job, right? Plus, wouldn't, like, if one of us have blinders on, isn't it more likely that we're missing something? So we consolidated our assessments. We looked really hard at what, you know, what we should be asking, how we should be asking. We didn't give up anything. In fact, I think we got better at it. We have more people who can do them. It did reduce the amount of hours that we have to ask of our businesses to do it, but that means they have more time to go do good things, like operationalize what we ask them to do rather than fill out an assessment report, right? Like, how about you go do what we tell you is the thing we want you to do, or let's talk about how to do it if it's a tough thing to solve together. That to me ends up having the real value, not did my piece of paper look separate and follow that. So,
right.
That's how we broke it down. And that's just a more concrete example. But the idea is really look about what are you trying to solve? Right? With assessments, you're trying to get at risk. If you're trying to get at risk, what's the best way to do that? Have people who can really see it. So you got a good talent that is not putting blinders on. You got to have businesses that have enough time and energy and focus on telling you the truth and understanding their business enough to know if the programs are hitting all the right cylinders. And that is not about a piece of paper that has to come three different times in three different ways. And it's more likely that if you do it that other way with three different papers, you lost those other things.
Yeah, so much falls through the cracks. There's a disengagement on the auditee's side, so to speak. And you just end up kind of spinning your wheels. So I have a whole list of questions.
I will tell you on this. I did get people who weren't on board, and it was tough for them because they were worried that we would be giving up on our principles.
Interesting.
So we had to work hard.
Do you believe that? No. That's what they thought? Or do you think they thought they were giving up on their like area of their fiefdom?
Both. I think some of them did believe it because they hadn't seen it done this way. And I think some people like to have, you know, done things a certain way.
Yeah.
But I think most of it was good intent. So, okay. You know, we had to overcome that. We had to show them what would work, have some quick wins, make a commitment that this was not going to change the principles of our ethics and compliance and privacy program. We were not changing the standard with which Allstate does any of those things for our customers. We think we were going to get better at them. And we had to show them that.
I think the proof's in the pudding. I think you guys have done that just given the fact that you're still doing it, right? Mm-hmm. And you're not the type of person to sort of etch something in stone. You're going to keep doing something if it's working and probably stop doing it if it's not. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's go back in time. Let's go to the young Courtney and let's give her some advice that you wish you had either when you were 25 or when you were just coming out of law school or even before that. What's like a massive lesson that you've learned that, man, if I had learned this earlier, I'd be further down the road or my impact would be bigger or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Good question. I probably have too many, but I would say the biggest one is not worrying about the job title or how many people you are asked to lead or what someone says is your level in a company. Go to places where there are smart people to learn from. Pick companies that make you wake up every day and like them. And be open to change. So for the most part, I did that. But there are times, if I'm being fair in my career, where I would be focused on, man, I really want to become an officer now, or I really want to lead this many people, or I really feel like I should do this now, right? And sometimes that sidetracks you. And it certainly at times sidetracked me, because if I look back and the things you and I are talking about, things that were really definitive for me, they formed who I was, they were where I had the most impact. Almost none of that stuff mattered. What mattered was I was with a bunch of smart people at good companies that were trying to do the right thing for customers, solving problems that were interesting. And I was learning and growing. And that was more important than, did I get my next level? Did I have that, you know, that certain title? And as soon as I let go of a lot of those things, I got those things and opportunities came. So, you know, it's tough. Corporate America is tough. You got to assert yourself. You got to, obviously, especially if you're a diverse person, sometimes it's hard to get in the room and to get yourself in there for promotion. So I don't want to deter that, because I do think people should advocate for themselves. At the same time, I think we have to know our worth. We have to contribute innovation and creativity in our opinion and enjoy what we're doing. And sometimes let some of that other, you know, kind of reward-based things control us.
Yeah, it's an encouragement to talk to you because you're somebody who I think kind of does it right, who kind of gets it. And you're kind of a testament to the fact that if you plant those good seeds, you're going to get a good harvest. And it might not be when you think it's going to happen, but you do those right things, you add value where you can, you put people first, put the business first, try to innovate and continue to add value, then those doors are going to be open for you.
Yeah, especially when you work for good companies, right? And you work with colleagues that are trying to do the right thing. And I have been fortunate to be in those positions and with good companies.
Well, Courtney, thank you so much for spending so much of your day with us and sharing so much. People can find you on LinkedIn, yes?
Absolutely.
All right. Until next time.
Thanks, Dick.